Okay, this is an open meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. We are glad you're all here, especially you, especially if you are new or coming back. It says all panels and main speakers are being recorded and will be available for free online at www.askipod.org about a week after the conference. All full names or tradition breaks will be omitted. Okay, now, just to give you a little outline of what's going on as far as with this traditions, I sort of outlined this a little bit with the idea of the prasa, of a prasa. And basically, if you haven't been to a prasa before, the way a prasa works is they have presentations at a prasa. And the way the presentations are given is a person gets a particular time frame in which to give their presentation. I'm going to need you to move over to this side. And I'm going to have our timer come up. And we're going to show you how this works. And she's going to take that seat. Or you can sit here. That's fine.
This is my tradition.
Okay.
Yes.
The way it works at PRASA is the presenter has a time frame of what they use to give their presentation. On the first after their introduction, the green light comes on. So, therefore we have the green light. Okay. Then, there's a warning light to tell them when they're almost about ready to be done. They're gonna have 8 minutes with the green light. Then the yellow light, come on. The yellow light gives an indication that they're almost ready to be finished and ready to be cut off. That light will stay on for 2 minutes, and then the red light will come on. Now, the way we shut people up at PRASA is everybody claps. So, as soon as the red light comes on, we're all going to start clapping, and this will show them that it's their time to step down. Next person to come on. Let me grab this real quick. And if you saw the flyer that I sent out, it had Noreen. Elle is being one of the presenters, but Noreen couldn't make it. So she sent one of her advocates for us. And these traditions are being presented, and I have our presenters reading the long form right after they introduce themselves. So what you're hearing is the long form of the traditions. It's not the short form that you usually hear at meetings and stuff. I'll read on the little flyer of panel that comes down. These are the long form of the tradition. So we're going to go ahead and start off with tradition one, and tradition one is Tara.
I'm Tara, I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Tara.
And this is tradition one. Our AA experience has taught us that each member of Alcoholics Anonymous is but a small part of a great whole. AA must continue to live, or most of us will surely die. Hence, our common welfare comes first, but individual welfare follows close afterward. For me, tradition one, all of the traditions kind of dovetail. They kind of say a lot of the same things that are important, but tradition one for me sums everything up. You know, it's about unity. It's about that we're all alike. There's some things that, you know, when I say I'm Tara, I'm an alcoholic, those words that come after my name mean something. They mean I experience the obsession and I experience the allergy, and that nothing I can do can change that. And when I hear another person say that, that's what they're telling me. And I know that's a powerful bond that we have. You know, I can talk about things in an AA meeting I can't talk about anywhere else, and that everyone in the meeting can understand. And that's what saves my life. That's why I'm alive today. And that's the only thing that's important. You know, all this other, you know, fellowship is great, and that keeps me sober too. But what I need is I need a place where I can be completely honest and completely open, and where people I love can call me on my issues, and I can be open. And you know, I need to remember that we're all alike. It's so easy for me to say, you know, well, this person does these things and I don't understand it and I don't like it and I'm afraid and I'm not going to relate to them and I don't want them around me, you know. When I get into that behavior, I'm going against unity. I'm not practicing that in my life. And, you know, it's difficult sometimes because that happens. That's what life is. And, you know, in my home group, you know, there are all kinds of things that we can talk about before the meeting and after the meeting, but during the meeting, it's about alcoholism, it's about recovery. And, you know, when... I need a little help here. I love these traditions checklists. Number one, am I, in my group, a healing, mending, integrating person, or am I divisive? What about gossip and taking other members' inventories? You know, a lot of times I find that when I'm upset with other people's behavior, it's me, you know, especially... and if I'm not taking care of myself and I'm acting out, you know, what am I? I'm not creating a safe place. And and I'm really nervous. It's, well, like, my dad has been sober for a long time, and I really love him, and I treasure the experience and wisdom that I get from him in my life, and every once in a while he engages in behavior that I don't understand and I don't like. And, you know, I have to see him as another member of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, and I can cut him out of my life. I don't want to do that. I have to accept his behavior. And when I look at what's going on in my life, I can draw parallels. And then as I work on my character defects, I'm more accepting of other people. And, you know... traditions are not just about the home group and about my family. I have to bring that into work, too, that there's a person that is very difficult, that I know she's a good person. Everybody's a good person. Everybody tries to do the best they can with what they have. And a lot of people see her behavior and decide they don't want anything to do with her. And it's easy for me to get caught up in that too, of separating myself from other people and finding reasons to judge them. And I can get into that with her too, or I can say this is a beautiful child of God, and I need to find a way to be of service. And you know, creating unity means I treat her with respect. And you know, when she had a birthday, she went around the whole office and said, "Oh, it's my birthday tomorrow. It's my birthday tomorrow." And a lot of people said, well, we don't like her. We don't want to participate. We don't want to show her any love or respect. And but, you know, going the extra mile and living spiritual principles means taking that aside and being that anyway. And, you know, we all came together. And we all put in a dollar and bought her birthday cake. And granted, you know, she wasn't very receptive of that. And I can take that two different ways. I can say that, you know, I put effort into helping another person and they didn't appreciate it. Or I can say that I did everything I could to show a person love and respect. And, you know... if I'm being resentful, I can't do that. If I'm looking for the differences instead of the similarities, I'm separating myself from other people. And it's easy for me to say, well, I don't like this group, I don't want to be a part of, or, and if I'm doing that, I'm not able to stay sober. You know, I love the picture in the illustrated book. There's a bunch of people sitting on a tree limb, and there's a guy who's really angry sitting next to the tree trying to saw off the tree limb. If I'm coming into my home group, or if I'm coming into my work, or if I'm coming into my family with resentment and fear, I'm taking apart the structure that supports me. You know, and I love this picture of the tree limb. That it's totally a metaphor for my program and my life today. There's so many things that I depend on just blindly with trust in. Thank you.
It's almost over.
I think that's not going to be a good
time. And, you know, that's one thing I love about my home group, that, you know, there's all kinds of opinions, there's all kinds of things we can talk about, but half of us are Democrats and half of us are Republicans, and there's some libertarians in there, but you know, we leave that separate. And by interacting with them, by sharing my ideas and listening to their ideas, I get a new perspective on the world around me, and that's what it's about. You know, it's about learning from other people that are different from me, you know, how we're the same, and deepening my understanding of my world and how I can participate in it. And, you know, when I practice love and tolerance with people that I don't understand, I can do that. When I first got sober, I'm a huge football fan. And I had a really hard time hugging people wearing jerseys of the other team. And I know that sounds really silly, but I had to work on that a whole lot. But the more I did it, the easier it got. And when I could do it with those little things, when I could set aside my differences and say, I love you regardless, then I could look at other things and I could take on, you know, those political perspectives. Again, not at the meeting, but like at a potluck. You know, I learned how to be a sober member of AA by communicating with other sober members of AA. And, you know, I'm still becoming the person that God needs me to be, but I need those examples.
Okay, one thing I forgot to mention, that these presentations are geared to be about 10 minutes long for each tradition, but if they finish a little early, that's fine. I just wanted to bring that to your attention. Okay, for tradition two, this gentleman I've known for a long time, and he's never denied me a request, and he lives in Phoenix. And when I asked him, he said that he would be honored to do this, and I thought that was great. So, Martin, come on up.
Hi, everybody. My name is Martin. I'm an alcoholic. And my home group is the Happy Valley Group in North Phoenix. We meet on Wednesday nights. I'd love to have you come up. It's 7 p.m. 39th Avenue and Happy Valley Road. And at my home group, we always say our sobriety date. And I haven't found it necessary to pick up the first drink since July 11th, 1987. And I have the opportunity to talk about tradition two. And I was about to correct Dana when he said that the long form are different. They're different for all of the traditions except this one, which says, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. All the other traditions in the long form are different than what we usually read in the short form, except that one. Who's in charge in Alcoholics Anonymous? A loving God, as he expressed himself in our group conscience. And it's real. You know, and Tara talked a little bit about, some of the kind of the interconnectedness of our traditions. And I believe that, none of the steps stand by themselves. Like if somebody was going to do just one of our 12 steps, that they wouldn't stay sober. And I believe the same thing about our traditions, that if we only had one tradition, you know, and somebody was, you know, going to bank on just one tradition, then our fellowship wouldn't stay together, that all of the traditions work together. But this one, it's possible that it could be as close to having a standalone tradition as we might have. You know, that we have, there's one ultimate authority, a loving God, as he expresses himself in our group conscience. If you're new to our fellowship, the way that Alcoholics Anonymous works is that we have 12 steps, and that's the program of recovery. But we have a delivery mechanism for our 12 steps, and that's the group. We don't have individuals in Alcoholics Anonymous, or the groups comprise individuals, that there's no one person that ever speaks for Alcoholics Anonymous, that it's a group of alcoholics that come together for one primary purpose, to carry their message to the alcoholic who still suffers, and that each group is part of a great whole, and that Tara talked about that in the first tradition. But in tradition two, the way that our group functions is through a group conscience. So there's never any one person that's ever a decision maker. And if you've read this book called 12 Steps and 12 Traditions, in tradition two, it has one of my favorite, terms ever, and I try to remember it. There are two of them, and it talks about the bleeding deacon and the elder statesman. And it tells a story in tradition two about, you know, the starting of a group, you know, in some town, you know, in Middletown, USA, that somebody moves there and he's got some sobriety, and he starts a group. And he has to do the work, right? Because who else is going to do it except him? He's been sober for a little while, has some experience from the other town where he lived, and, you know, and he got the church and, you know, made the contract, and he bought the coffee pot, and he did this and he did that, and he wrote the format and got some other alcoholics. Next thing you know, that there's a group. And the time goes by and decisions are made, and this person makes a lot of the decisions. But then there comes a time when there's a new group, a new decision to be made, and then the group decides something different than what the founder decided, you know. And the 12 of 12 talks about, you know, it's kind of like there's a critical junction there, okay, well, it's how is the founder going to handle that the group is deciding something contrary to what he wants. And the two things that usually happen, either someone turns into, you know, a bleeding deacon, or they're the elder statesman. You know, and a bleeding deacon, I think, kind of speaks for itself. I don't know where they got the term, but I love it. It couldn't be anything else. So a deacon is a leader in the church, but if you're the, it's got a pretty good image for me. So that, and I've been through it in my own ex-home group that I was a member of for 8 years. And I know Dana from area service. We're involved in general service, and in general service, that we have a way of doing things. There's a definite way of operating with the Robert's Rules of Order and the way that the group, the area, speaks. You know that it's an orderly. It happens. It's not chaos. That there's a way to do it, and I applied a number of those principles that I learned in area service in my home group to what I would call a bleeding deaconess, because I have personal experience with this. My former home group in Glendale was that we had somebody that basically founded the group. You know, it was just almost word for word out of tradition 2 and the 12 and 12. But she could not let go of so many things, of the finances, of dealing with the church liaison, of this and that, and having to be involved in every single decision. And I saw some really quality people year after year. Just it would happen that they would be at the business meeting, there would always be some kind of friction and contention, and this the bleeding deaconess would just have to be in charge and just would not let go, and that people would get upset and then leave. And then it came to be my turn to leave. I did everything that I could to try to keep the group, you know, together, and it put somebody down. And that I love this. If you haven't ever seen this pamphlet, it's my favorite piece of AA literature. And that you know, you might be able to see it in the back, but it's, we've got this guy here. He starts off little and gets bigger and bigger and bigger and doing this, and he's going to do that. And the group conscience says, you know, down boy, you know. We tried that in our group, but the solution that we had was to be able to go, boy, that goes by fast. Anyway, the group conscience came in, and we tried it. But see, sometimes what happens, if people don't adhere to the traditions, damages the group, and then people leave. So I left the group. Is the group still going? Yes. But would I call it a healthy, vibrant, a productive home group? The answer would be no. So what the decision that I made was to go find a group that adheres to the traditions, that has the principle of rotation, that there's no one person in charge, that we rotate out, you know, of jobs, and that everybody has an opportunity to have their voice heard, and that we have a group where a loving God really is the ultimate authority. But I'm just really happy to be here, and I'm not going to hear the buzzer. I'm going to, or see the red light. I see the yellow light, so I'm going to shut up and sit down. Thank you.
Thank you, Martin. Okay. This next presenter that I have coming up, I met a while back ago as well. I haven't known him for a long, long time, but he's become very, very, very dear to my heart. And this guy is so knowledgeable about program, it amazes me. So next person to present is Daniel.
My name is Daniel. I'm a very grateful recovered alcoholic.
Thank you.
I have to excuse me, I'm in rare form tonight. about a week out of the hospital and getting better, but just happy as ever to be here instead of at home and on my back like I have for the last couple days. So thank you. Um, my home group is a stay out of the way group of Alcoholics Anonymous in Tucson, Arizona. It's part of District 11, Pima County. I'm district committee member for 11110, sub-district in that area, and I'm the treasurer of my home group. I've always been, since my sponsor told me to get involved, involved in service, and I believe it brings something new to each every person's recovery who is a part of that. I don't believe it can be the same without it. That's my belief through my experience. The my sobriety date is July 25th of 2006, and the tradition that tradition three, which I just love the way Dana has this set up, because the long form of this tradition, as opposed to the short form of this tradition, is so different. And you will run into many different people, and you will get people who say words don't mean much. I am one who says words mean the difference of life and death. Okay. This third tradition, in my opinion, is probably the most misunderstood, definitely the most misquoted when you're around just the general meeting circumstances. The long form reads something like this: our membership ought to include all who suffer from alcoholism. Hence, we may refuse none who wish to recover, nor ought AA membership ever depend upon money or conformity. Any two or three alcoholics gathered together for sobriety may call themselves an AA group, provided that as a group they have no other affiliation. Okay, and the 12 and 12 is one area where it will talk about this. Everyone is just so blown away by Alcoholics Anonymous and having its no rules for membership. Okay, we have one rule, or one, how should I say this? One regulation, only one necessity to be a member here, and that's that you be alcoholic. Anything else, we really don't care. You could be down here, you could be up here, you could be rich, you could be poor, you could be neon green for all we care, but you must be alcoholic. And this, in as far as I'm concerned, because this has so dearly touched my life, is why I like to speak on it so much, is because there is no other reason that AA could ever possibly work except for it being one alcoholic to work with another alcoholic. That is the answer for alcoholism. Okay, yeah, AA is great. It has steps. It has God. It has all of these other things. But ask yourself this. Those steps, I'm assuming by those of you who are sitting in this room who have taken those steps, they've probably made a very profound and deep impact in your life. Because I only know that because they have on mine. The only question I would have to have you ask yourself is, what besides another alcoholic could have ever gotten you to take those actions? Because none of those actions to me were new. People had been telling me I should be honest, I should be loving, I should admit when I'm wrong, I should make amends where I had done harm, that all of these things, people have been telling me that since kindergarten. Okay? My mom and dad have tried to drill that into my head for years. The judges, the teachers, everyone. Deep down inside, every single time I was ever given any point of information, was always the thought of, look, buddy, I understand what you're trying to tell me is probably good information. But what you don't understand is that my case is different. Okay? If you had my problems, if you had this going on, if you felt the way I felt, if you drank the way I drank, you would do this too. And I realize you mean the best, but you truly don't understand me. Okay? Until I showed up to Alcoholics Anonymous and I sat down in front of people like yourselves. And they sat me down and they told me exactly the way they felt, exactly the way they drank, exactly what they did. For the very first time in my life was I able to look at people and say, these people truly understand. Dr. Bob talks about it in his story puts it in probably the best wording that anybody could ever put it, and I don't have time to read it, but I encourage everyone to go read it. It's right before he lists the four reasons why he works with others. But what he ends up saying is that this was the first living human who had spoken to him about alcoholism through actual experience. Okay, and so once I had the idea that you guys had done what I had done, had felt what I had felt, had drank like I had drank, maybe, just maybe, if I do what you guys do, I could have what you guys have. Okay, so this whole one alcoholic working with another is the only thing that works for alcoholism, because we are so defiant as humans and alcoholics that we are unwilling to listen to anybody just try to give us a suggestion. You know, we're not going to listen to it. But if we can see proof that this might work for us, then most of us of the time we are willing to try it. So I'd like you guys to ask yourself, who was that person that made that difference for you? Who was that group that made that difference for you? And if you can put an answer to that question, then why not have a more desperate need for unity of a fellowship of people who are carrying this message to others who suffer from this life and death illness? This isn't just a little social thing and come hang out in ASCII pod. For many of us, this is life and death. And it's my life. And it's your life. And that's what's put on the line here. And my life was saved when I showed up to Alcoholics Anonymous due to the simple fact that you understood. You were able to win my confidence so that I could start to take actions that I didn't yet believe were going to work. The short form of this tradition says something, the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. A lot of the times it is misquoted as a desire not to drink. I would say there's a difference between a desire not to drink and a desire to stop, because you cannot stop something you haven't done. I like how it's worded in the third one. It says our membership ought to include all who suffer from alcoholism. Okay, that means that there's probably got to be a little bit of pain there. And I think the only reason that they did this was so that if I came to AA and I truly didn't want to, and I truly wanted to stop drinking, but it really hadn't been very troublesome for me, it would have been pretty hard for me to involve myself in 12-step work when I got to the 12th step. Because if alcohol really hasn't been problematic in my life, and you're a newcomer and you walk into the fellowship and I sit you down, how am I going to really convince you that I was once just like you if I really haven't seen any problems from alcohol? I mean, I could sit you down and say, yeah, actually, I like it a lot, but you should stop. You probably wouldn't listen. And I think that's where they were kind of going with this whole thing. And I don't think back when they wrote the long form or condensed them to the short form, I don't think it was a very big worry of people coming to Alcoholics Anonymous by the millions. I don't think it was a big worry of it being some sort of a social movement. I think most people didn't want to be in Alcoholics Anonymous back then. It was kind of the uncool thing to be. But the spiritual avenue of this tradition to me just speaks leaps and bounds, and I know I probably got about 1 minute, so I'm gonna wrap it up with this, is that the only way that I have ever found to look at my past and what I've gone through and what I'd went through and through alcoholism was by turning them into assets to help using them for others. And I believe that's what this whole program is about. Is I think the whole purpose of the steps is to get us to a certain point where my selfishness and self-centeredness will be lowered just enough to be willing to stick out my hand to help you. That other than that, I'm just here for myself until I get to that 12th step, and then it is no longer about me. How this could keep us united and how this could drive us apart is something so simple. We're here. One alcoholic, working with another alcoholic. Let us not ever lose that. Let us not ever grow from that. Let's not ever get too complicated that we're here for any other reason except for I'm a drunk and you're a drunk and I found a way to stay sober and I would be happier than ever to be willing to show you how to do the same thing. AA doesn't need to be more than that. That's what AA has been this whole time, and that's why I'm alive today. That's why you're alive today. And if that's both of our truths, then what that means is that the lives of those to come rest on that as well. Let's keep it simple. Thank you.
Okay, great. The way we have this set up is basically so you guys don't get bogged down with all this information and you go out of here with your heads going, oh, what the heck did he just talk about? I tried to break it up in four sections. First three traditions, second three traditions, third three traditions, and the fourth three traditions. So right now what I'd like to do is if anybody has any questions or maybe a thought they might have, a comment about what one of those traditions meant to you, or what insights that you've had from any of those first three traditions, we open it up now to you guys. You can talk for 1 minute and share what you would like to share with us. If you have a question, that works too. As soon as you start talking, though, the light goes on, and after 30 seconds, the light, yellow light, will come on, and after 1 minute, the red light comes on. So, is there anybody that has any comments or some insight to what those first three traditions, or even a question? And if not, we're going to move on to the next three traditions. So everybody got everything out of that they needed. And you're all well now for those first three traditions? Great. I know that people are going to be walking in. This is not my first Askipon or my first dog and pony. So I know that you guys actually had stayed up until about 4 or 5 this morning. And Ned went to bed. So there are probably going to be people coming in and going out. And the door's probably going to make some noise. So if you try not to pay attention too much to that, that's going to be great. And we'll just move along. Our next presenter for Tradition 4 is Alicia. And she is a young lady I met in Green Valley. And it has been an honor to watch her grow in this program and see how she has obtained the principles of this program. And when it was suggested to me that maybe I might use her, I jumped at the chance. So it's yours. Tradition 4.
Let me get set up here. I love my checklist. My name's Alicia. I'm an alcoholic. Tradition 4. With respect to its own affairs, each AA group should be responsible to no other authority than its own conscience. But when its plans concern the welfare of neighboring groups also, those groups ought to be consulted. And no group, regional committee, or individual should ever take any action that might greatly affect AA as a whole without conferring with the trustees of the General Service Board. On such issues, our common welfare is paramount. My sobriety date is September 6th of 2004. My home group is the late nighters meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. We meet every Saturday night at 11 p.m. at Central Office in Tucson, Arizona. If you're ever up in Tucson, we would love to have you. And if you come to our meeting on a third Saturday of the month, we do have a tradition study, which is a huge deal for me and makes me very, very proud to be a home group member. I'm a really big believer in, I need to tell you that I've never had a legal drink of alcohol. And the reason that that's important is because I came into Alcoholics Anonymous and the 12 steps taught me what kind of woman I was and what kind of woman I had the potential to be with the 12 steps and God's help. And the 12 traditions have taught me how to interact, in a well-behaved manner as a woman in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm going to cry. I love the traditions. With you as fellow AA members and with individuals who are non-alcoholic, because whether I like it or not, I'm a representative of Alcoholics Anonymous, even when I don't want to be. And, you know, with respect to Alcoholics Anonymous, this tradition, the long of the short of it is study the traditions. You know, if you don't want your group to infiltrate or affect other AA groups, study the traditions. You know, why is it important that the group comes first? You know, that we can't let individuals run our meeting. Why is it important that the ultimate authority in our meetings is God? You know, the only opinion that matters is God's. You know, why is it important that as AA members, we are alcoholic? You know, as Daniel was just talking about, you know, what is the primary purpose? The primary purpose is to carry the AA message, not my message, not Todd's message, the AA message as outlined in the big book and is directed by my group conscience. You know, why aren't we affiliated with money, property, and prestige? These are all really important things. Why do we not promote ourselves as alcoholics or as individuals? You know, if you want your group to be successful, just study the traditions. You know, and the most important thing, one of the underlying features of the fourth tradition, is you have the right to be wrong. You know, every group has the right to be wrong. And every group that I go to has the right to do it their way. And one of my favorite parts of the fourth tradition is never take yourself too damn seriously. You know, my mistakes and the group's mistakes benefit other groups and benefit other AA members. You know, so how do I apply that into my daily life? You know, do I allow you the autonomy to be wrong? Do I allow you to hit the same wall over and over and over again? Or do I not allow you to have your experience? You know, do I shame you for that? You know, I personally believe that one of the worst things that we can do as people, as a society in general, is shame another person's experience. And I've done it. You know, I'm going through a difficult time right now. You know, somebody that I absolutely love is dying. You know, they are somebody that I love unconditionally. And just yesterday, she tried to kill herself. You know, she tried to OD. And it breaks my heart. And what breaks my heart is that I'm disappointed. You know, because I know that she could come in here and live an awesome life. But I don't know if she wants it. And I don't know if she knows if she wants it, you know? And so one of the, I'm shaking, oh. And now I can't see. You know, so the fifth, I love the traditions checklist. If you don't know what it is, it helps check my behavior against the traditions. And number five right here, am I willing to help a newcomer go to any lengths? His lengths, not mine. You know, like, I don't know what anybody needs. You know, I know that in my sobriety, some of the stuff that I've done and maybe some of the stuff that I'm still doing would get another person drunk. You know, I'm fully aware of that. But I think I know what's best for you. You know, because I have a solid program. I go to meetings. I have service. I talk to my sponsor. I talk to sponsees. I'm willing to be there for friends. You know, my sobriety is solid. I want what I have. And you should want what I have. And if you don't want it, I'm going to give it to you anyway, and I'm going to shove it down your throat. You know? You know, like, I wish that we got this through osmosis. I wish that I could work my program 10 times harder so she could stay sober. You know, but I don't know what her length is. I don't know. And all I can do is be supportive and be the best friend that I can be and be the best example of sobriety. You know? And sometimes that's really hard. You know, sometimes that's really hard for me because I've seen the miracles. You know, you have given me that miracle. I've seen it in all of you, you know, watching you guys come in or come in when you're having a tough time and sharing what's really going on with you. You give me hope that I can stay sober through that too. You know, your experience benefits me, and I hope that my experience benefits you. I hope that I give you the permission to fall in love with Alcoholics Anonymous the way that you have given me the permission to fall in love with Alcoholics Anonymous. But I gotta get out of the way sometimes. You know, I absolutely have to get out of the way. And I have to be willing to allow you to have your length. And be supportive of that. You know? God, that's hard. I don't want to. You know, I'm not willing to lose another person to this disease. You know? It's hard. It really sucks. And the probability is that she's gonna die. You know, that's a very real probability. And, I tell her I love her every chance I get. Because I don't know if it's gonna be the last time she gets to hear that from me. You know? But she has a God. Whether she believes it or not. And that God's gonna help her find that length. And that maybe what I'm doing, being a friend and staying out of her way and just being an ear and just being supportive and giving her the right to be wrong and giving her the right to hit the same wall over and over and over again can help her stay sober one more day. You know, because you guys have done that for me. I can't tell you how many times I've sat in meetings hysterically crying, running into the same wall over and over and over again. And people look at me and say, turn right or turn left. You know, just pick one. Turn right or turn left. And I couldn't. I absolutely could not. And they gave me the respect and the dignity to keep hitting that wall until God came in and swooped up and said, okay, baby, it's time to go left. You know, I also, you know, I remember when I first got sober, I was going to Smoke-Free New Nurses, a meeting in Tucson at First and Prince, and I was going to the 5:30 meeting religiously, and when I finally, like, branched out to other meetings, I would sit there and I would just be like in shock of how they were doing it wrong, you know? And I would call my sponsor and I'd be like, they passed the basket before the end of the 15 minutes. Or like, people clapped. Or they passed a birthday cake. Like, what is this? This is not AA. And she would just laugh, you know? She would just laugh. And I really believed that my group was the only group that was doing it right, you know? And I still think that, you know, like, I still go to meetings. I've been to meetings. I've had the awesome opportunity to go to meetings. I grew up in Chicago, Illinois. I've gotten to go home and go to meetings there and just sit there and go, man, I love this city, but you guys are not doing AA, man. You know? Or go to California, and no offense to my Californians, don't look at me like that. You know, and they're clapping and it's like, this is serious. We can't clap in this meeting. There's no joy here. You know? And that's not even true. You know, I'm a firm believer that if you are not laughing in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, you are not taking this program seriously. You know, this is an awesome experience. I thank God. Okay. My light switched. You know, I am a huge, huge fan of the traditions. I absolutely love them. You know, they have definitely helped me to become a better person and help me to interact with you and to respect you, and not always perfectly. You know, like, I'm a really big believer that the only way I learn the traditions is by breaking them. You know, I get the, and sometimes I still do, you know, sometimes I still make mistakes, but those mistakes benefit me and they benefit you. And, I'm gonna end with that. Thank you so much for letting me share.
What are you doing down there, girl? We're missing one of our presenters from up here on the stage, and she happens to be down there. But I met this lady a long time ago. during service work, and she was a GSR at that time and a representative of a group, and she's just been somebody who's been inspiration to me as far as with a request, service request. I don't think she's ever turned one down. So if you would, come on up, and you have tradition number 5.
Kathy.
Thank you. My name is Kathy, and I'm an alcoholic. Okay. By the grace of God and the power of Alcoholics Anonymous, I haven't had to have a drink since January 7th, 1986. And yeah, buddy, that's a miracle. My home group is the Wednesday night 12-step study group in Tucson, Arizona, 7:30 on 22nd Street near the Fry's, kitty corner from Fry's. Y'all come. It's a great group. It's my home group. It's the best group in Tucson. Just ask me. And if I don't feel that way, I'm not all right. And if you don't feel that way about your home group, then do something about it. The home group for me is where I learned about traditions. You know, today we're talking from the 12 and 12 and this pamphlet, and this is a great pamphlet, and the checklist. But I'm that kind of a person that I need to get my hands on something. I need to experience it. I need to touch it for it to make sense and for it to be real. One of the best stories that ever happened to me, and before I do that, I need to read the long form. I'm getting into this before the reading the tradition. Tradition 5, each Alcoholics Anonymous group ought to be a spiritual entity having but one primary purpose, that of carrying its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. Okay. I need to get my hands on stuff. If I'm going to learn about something, I need to touch it, I need to experience it. I'm just one of those kind of learners. Some people are visual, some people are auditory. I need to experience it. And I experienced the traditions in my home group. And you know, a lot of times we learn by experience. You know, we learn our traditions. We hammered out our traditions on the anvil of experience. That was one of the things that I had read, and you know, that made so much sense because my group was the same way. And this is where I learned to love Alcoholics Anonymous. This is where I learned that it's okay to get mad in a group, and people won't hold a resentment against you. And I needed to learn about that. You know, every single tradition became living because of what I experienced in my home group. And I want to share with you probably one of the best stories that I've ever heard. I experienced it, you know, and that's part of it. As you get involved in service, you have the opportunity to develop your own novel, I like to say, develop your own story. I got sober in New Jersey, and it was where I landed. I don't come from New Jersey. It's just where I landed after running around and ramming around. I got sober, got involved in service right away because I had a sponsor that pushed me. And I got exposed to area-level service pretty quickly. I didn't have a position, but, you know, I just tag along and watch and learn and listen. And I watched a GSR at an area assembly get up and introduce himself. And he introduced his name and his service position and his sobriety date and his home group. And then he told this story. He said, "We're a new group. We don't really know what we were doing. And I'm really grateful that we had somebody come visit us because we needed to get straightened out. You see, we had a little bit extra money in the treasury, and we decided to take a trip to Aruba. And, you know, it wasn't just to the Jersey Shore. It was Aruba. And they did this. They had the flight. They had the car rental. They went out and they bought, they went out and we bought clothing. We bought wardrobe. And this person came in and introduced herself and said, "I'd like to have a little business meeting with you right now." And she explained what we're all about with Tradition 5, our primary purpose, carry this message to the alcoholic who's still suffering. So how do you think you're doing that with this little trip to Aruba? And they began to see, oh, yeah. And he's telling this story at an area assembly, which was wonderful humility. He was such a beautiful kid, you know. By my standards, anyway. He finished his story by saying, you know, the traditions can be bent, folded, spindled, and mutilated, but sooner or later, you have to comply with them, and we did. We pushed, we sold back we gave back the car rental. We gave back the wardrobe. We took everything back. We couldn't get all of our money back on the flights. And then he told how his group felt about losing money because they couldn't get a full refund on the flights. And he said that was about 37 big books. And all of a sudden, things weren't so funny anymore. You know, this tradition all of a sudden was real. Our primary purpose, when compromised, cost that group some big books for the new alcoholic. You know, and all of a sudden now it's real, it's solid. And, you know, that has stuck with me. This story is 20 years old. You know, this is something that happened so long ago. The group's still there. They know a little bit more about traditions, but they learned. You know, they learned from experience. They'll never forget it. You know, every single one of them had a sense of responsibility to the next drunk coming along that didn't have one of those 37 or 38 big books that they couldn't buy because they couldn't get a full refund on their flights. You know, that's why those traditions are important. Oh, yeah, those traditions. They're my traditions. One of the things that I liked when I did a little bit of reading, I saw we are under a compulsion of self-preservation, duty, and love to carry this message to those who don't know that yet, that there's a way out. That compulsion of self-preservation, I don't carry this message, I'm going to die. Duty, yeah, you know, Dr. Bob talks about duty. You know, I have to whom much is given, much is expected. I'm not quite sure if that's the right expression, but that's the idea. I got a lot, and, you know, it's my turn to start giving. At what point is it not? And love. You know, I didn't know how to do that, and I didn't particularly care about you schmucks when I walked in the door. That needed to turn around, and it did. I had the capacity to love without any scoreboarding. I like to say scoreboarding. You know, that's not love. You know, love is when there's no strings attached. There's no scoreboard, that unconditional love. The last paragraph in this tradition, I'm just checking my time. The last paragraph in this tradition talks about and sums up another story. It's a story that if you read Tradition 5, it'll go into great detail. One drunk visited another in a hospital, and the drunk that was in hospital was very challenging. We don't do that. He was very challenging. He said, well, what are you here for? Do you want money, and are you pushing religion, and argumentative. And he finally, the guy who was a drunk in the hospital, gets sober, stays sober, and he talks about his experience of another drunk coming to visit him and carry the message. He said, I want to read this. Well, he sold me on one idea, and that was sobriety. At the time, I couldn't have bought anything else. You know, that's primary purpose. You know, I'm not there to collect money. As a group, we're not there to collect money. You know, we're not there to ensure conformity to our way of doing things. We're there to offer an opportunity to get sober. That's it. You know, and that's what drunks can buy. Religion, you know, some people will talk about religion. We don't. You know, sober, good, solid groups and Alcoholics Anonymous don't do that. They stick to that one primary purpose. In the very, very beginning, and I wanted to make sure to get this in here because I didn't understand it, and I had to go look it up in the dictionary. It starts with shoemaker, stick to thy last. I didn't know what that meant. I had to go look it up and ask about it. A last is a model. You know, if you have a size 7 shoe in California and a size 7 shoe in New York, it should be the same thing. And the last is the model around which an old cobbler, you know, olden days, they had cobblers, and that's the model around which you made a shoe. They had a size 7 last and a size 8 last and so on. Shoemakers, stick to thy last. It's the thing that defines the shoemaker. You know, our primary purpose, that of being sober and offering that idea of sobriety, is our last, analogously speaking. That's what we have to offer. That's our primary purpose. We start deviating from that, and we start doing things like trips to Aruba because we have extra money. You know, we're missing the boat, like by 37 big books. I don't want to be the one responsible for that. So, you know, that's why these things become personal in my life. You know, and I always thought, yeah, okay, it's for the group. Or, yeah, okay, it's for the GSR. And, you know, it's not. It's for every single one of us. And it's just a way to make my life a whole lot easier. You know, what's my primary purpose at work? My purpose at work is to help my company make more money. That's why everybody gets up in the morning and goes into work. You know, if I'm costing my company some money by some crazy idea that I and only I have, well, I'm a little off track there. I'm not on board with my company. I can bring this tradition to my company in that fashion. You know, what's my primary purpose in my family? You know, to carry this message of love. You know, and no, I can't say my family's particularly interested in Alcoholics Anonymous, but I can carry that idea of love. You know, are they open to that? You bet. You know, I'm the daughter that they always wanted me to be, the sister that they always wanted me to be. That's how I can carry this tradition. Am I perfect? Oh no, but that's how I learn. You know, just like that GSR sharing his experience, strength, and hope of the trip to Aruba. We learn through experience, and, you know, that's okay. I need the opportunity to be able to do that. And with that, I'll hush. Thank you.
Thank you, Kathy.
That was great. Okay, we're moving right along. This next guy, I knew when he first came into the program. He was 28 years old when he first, or 23 years old when he was introduced to the program, and finally got a hold of this program was when he was 28, and he celebrated 26 years yesterday. And his name is Dana. That's me. Oh, thank you. Yeah, my sobriety date, my name's Dana, I'm an alcoholic, and my sobriety date is October the 28th of 1985, and my home group is the Smoke-Free Nooners in Tucson, Arizona. When I was requested to put this together, it was to follow the outline of another traditions program that went on in Sarita, and it turned out to be a really good traditions program, so I hope that we can continue with that. My tradition that I will be doing is tradition 6, and this is the long form of tradition 6. It says, problems of money, property, and authority may easily divert us from our primary spiritual aim. We think, therefore, that any considerable property of genuine use to AA should be separately incorporated and managed, thus dividing the material from the spiritual. An AA group, as such, should never go into business. Secondary aids to AA, such as clubs, hospitals, which requires such property or administration, ought to be incorporated and so set apart that, if necessary, they can be freely discarded by the groups. Hence, such facilities ought not to use the AA name. Their management should be the sole responsibility of those who financially support them. For clubs, AA managers are usually preferred, but hospitals as well as other places of recuperation ought to be well outside AA and medically supervised. While an AA group may cooperate with anyone, such cooperation ought never to go so far as affiliation or endorsement, actual or implied. An AA group can bind itself to no one. Wow. It's a long tradition. And I started looking at this and I was going, oh my God, that's a lot of information in that. I was getting a little discombobulated as far as trying to get all that together and try to look at trying to put everything in a hole with that whole part, with that whole tradition. So I decided, well, let's break this up. And the first part of it says, problems of money, property, and authority may easily divert us from our primary spiritual aim. What is our primary spiritual aim? Our primary spiritual aim is to carry the message to the alcoholic who still suffers. If we, the members of Alcoholics Anonymous, shift our primary purpose and begin to put money and property such as meeting places, and an excessive prudent reserve, buildings, other entities of material items before what our spiritual aim is, then we have shifted our emphasis from carrying the message to material things. Basically, to me, this isn't a spiritual type of what our program's all about. Our spiritual program is to be able to carry that message, and part of what it talks about in our traditions is by carrying that message to have some humility. One of the things of what, after looking at this, I started thinking, well, I'm the type of person who likes to take control of everything, and as was mentioned earlier, tries to tell people how they should be and how they should act and stuff. And with this particular part, if I start getting into material things, I'm no longer looking at the spiritual essence of this part of the program, of that carrying the message. I've now become interested in other things outside of the spiritual part of this program. And that, to me, is not part of what the program's all about. The next part of that tradition says, we think, therefore, that any considerable property of genuine use to AA should be separately incorporated and managed and divided, and dividing the material from the spiritual. I started looking at this and I was thinking, what the heck are they talking about? What comes to mind with this is, what is considerable property of genuine use to AA? What about Alano clubs? Alano club is a considerable property that's used to AA. What about central offices? Those are considerable use that are used to AA members. One of the things I was thinking about was, these are entities that can be, that can obtain property and funded by members or groups. They should not have an AA name associated with them, except to show cooperation with AA and not affiliation. The AA members, the AA meetings held at these locations should never be affiliated with the entity of that corporation. We need to separate the spiritual part of that from the material part of that. I can go to a meeting at an Alano club, but that's an AA meeting. That's not an Alano. It may be held at the Alano club, but it's an AA meeting. The Alano club gets its financial support from two ways. One, they charge membership. The other thing is they have the groups pay for rent at those locations. And the groups that are paying rent at those locations, usually what happens is that's the way that they separate themselves from the Alano club. That's the way they separate themselves from a particular meeting place. That's the way they separate themselves and keep themselves spiritually in the realm of what that particular tradition is talking about. That separation from material items, to maintain the spiritual essence of carrying the message that alcoholic just still suffers. That's what that's about. I'm not supposed to get into these things about obtaining property and stuff. If an Alano club's there, fine. And they have managers and stuff like that. I used to be a manager in the Alano club in Flagstaff. I know all about that. Getting back to the point of trying to run things. The thing was, is we tried to keep the Alano club separate entity from AA itself. If you look at the service structure for AA, it's an upside down triangle, right? And the upside down triangle, there is the groups, there is the GSRs and DCMs, then there's the area, then there's GSO and Grapevine. Well, there's nothing in there that shows that the central offices or Alano clubs. If you look at one that shows the central offices, it has a little line going to the side of where that upside down pyramid is and over to the side. They cooperate with our general service office. They're not a part of. They utilize the name of, you call up a central office, they'll answer it, Alcoholics Anonymous, to show their cooperation with it. But in essence, they're not really affiliated with the AA. They are run by the groups. The groups are the ones that run the central offices. And that's where that comes apart, comes about. For the Alano clubs, it's the members. Members of an Alano club. That's how they get theirs. And so we need to make sure that we separate that material from the spiritual. It says an AA group should never go into business. What's business? Hey, let's open up a 12-step store. We can sell items like big books, medallions, all sorts of stuff. That's not part of our traditions either. We shouldn't be in business. Groups should not be in business for themselves. They shouldn't be out to start looking at profits. If I'm in a group and we decide to open up a business, all of a sudden our emphasis has changed from going, from carrying the message, that spiritual aim of carrying the message to the alcoholic who still suffers, to profits. We're in business to make profits. Well, if I'm in business to make profits, I'm no longer in business to carry the message to the alcoholic who still suffers. I need to make sure that I maintain that spiritual aim. It says, secondary aids such as clubs, hospitals, which require much property administration, ought to be incorporated and so set apart that, if necessary, they can be freely discarded by groups. Hence, the facility ought not to be to use an AA name, and their management should be the sole responsibility to those people who financially support them. Clubs, for clubs, AA managers are usually preferred, but hospitals as well as other recuperation places of recuperation ought to be well outside AA and medically supervised. The secondary aids to AA are anything that would help in the referring to entities which can care that cater or otherwise help an alcoholic in their endeavor to get sobriety. Even though an AA members may use the places of the names these places, the name of Alcoholics Anonymous should not be associated with them. AA members may work for the entity, but we should never say that this entity is Alcoholics Anonymous. I know people that are counselors. They work for an entity, but they are not that they are not Alcoholics Anonymous. They work for a treatment center. Cool, that's fine. But they should not use Alcoholics Anonymous. And finally, that last part there is, while an AA group may cooperate with anyone, such cooperation ought never go so far as affiliation or endorsement. Actual or implied, an AA group can bind itself to no one. An AA member has a right to choose any to affiliate or cooperate with any entity they wish to. But a line must be drawn in the sand, and it comes to starting that the affiliation or endorsing that outside enterprise, and therefore AA can...
Okay.
Now that we got that guy off of the podium. All right, we're going to go ahead and moving right along here. Our next tradition we're going to be sharing on is going to be tradition 7. And once again, Tara's going to be giving a presentation on that.
I'm Tara. I'm still an alcoholic.
Thanks, Tara.
And, I'll read the seventh tradition here. The AA groups themselves ought to be fully supported by the voluntary contributions by their own members. We think that each group should soon achieve this ideal, that any public solicitation of funds using the name of Alcoholics Anonymous is highly dangerous, whether by groups, clubs, hospitals, or other outside agencies, that acceptance of large gifts from any source or of contributions carrying any obligation whatever is unwise. Then, two, we view with much concern those AA treasuries which continue beyond prudent reserves to accumulate funds for no stated AA purpose. Experience has often warned us that nothing can so surely destroy our spiritual heritage as futile disputes over property, money, and authority. And when I think about Tradition 7, the first thing I think of is the third step promises on page 63, where there's one sentence: we had a new employer. An employer is capitalized. You know, for me, that means that's talking about God. God is my employer. And I may get a regular paycheck, and it may have a human being's signature on it, but everything that I have in my life to be of service and to take care of myself comes from my higher power. And when I show up at work with that attitude of everything I get, I have to do God's will, and I'm here to be of service, and I can work for fun and for free, then nothing bothers me. Anything can happen around me, and I'm here to be of service. I'm here to participate. And, you know, this is my favorite tradition. It's also the hardest one for me to work because it's about finances. We're talking about money here. And it's very, you know, it's so easy for me to get caught up in, I need all these things in order to feel okay. You know, and what am I doing when I do that? I'm making a material thing my higher power. And Dina talked a lot about, you know, the material versus the spirituality. And a big part of my struggles in my program are putting my spirituality in the right place. Because I think, oh, everything's going to be great if I could just get everything the way it's supposed to be, you know? And what am I doing there is I'm defining what my life is supposed to look like instead of letting God do it. And I think, well, if I have this great big house and this awesome TV and all these things, then I'm going to be okay. But, and then I run into this problem of I don't have the finances to support the lifestyle that I want. And I don't have, my group sometimes doesn't have the finances to do all the things that I think they should be doing. And what I run into there is, you know, if I don't have the support, it doesn't need to be done. And that's where my God comes in. And, you know, my life looks so different today than the way I thought it was supposed to when I first got sober. If you had told me all the things that I would value today, I would not believe it for a second. You know, my first 6 months or year sober. And I also think, too, about the seventh tradition we actually got from John Rockefeller, John D. Rockefeller, and it talks about in the forewords that he threw a big dinner for all of his friends. That and Bill had this great idea that he was going to use this as a fundraiser. This was going to support all of his hospitals and this 4-story hospital franchise all around the country that was going to do everything that alcoholics needed to do. And all he needed was financial support. He had these grand plans of how Alcoholics Anonymous was supposed to look, and somebody else was going to be footing the bill. And during this dinner, that's not what happened. John D. Rockefeller stood up in front of his friends and said that, you know, all these people want is your moral support. They're not asking for money. And of course, Bill went to his office the next day to tell him off. I mean, from my understanding. And he told him, you know, if something is going to have value, you know, I need to build it myself in my life. That the things that I've been given, I really don't appreciate nearly as much as the things that I've had to work to earn. And if I want to have respect for the material things in my life that I used to be of service, they need to come from my own efforts. And that's why, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous works so beautifully the way it does, is we put our energy into it. Nobody is giving me any gifts. And, you know, when I put a dollar in my home group's basket, that it's my group. It belongs to me. It belongs to all of us. And when I go to other groups and I put a dollar in their basket, I'm participating in the support of their service structure and how they run their meetings. And anything that I can be a part of is a beautiful thing, because my whole life I was looking to be divisive and try to, you know, have things my way and you know, I know how things are supposed to be. But today my life is different. And you know, I don't even have to like the way a group is run. There's a lot of meetings that I don't like, but put a dollar in the basket anyway, because I want to be a part of.
and I'll pass.
Okay, thank you. All right, moving right along. That was tradition 7. So we're going to move to tradition 8. And once again, Martin's going to come up and...
Hi, everybody. My name is Martin. I'm an alcoholic. I really am an alcoholic. I've lost the ability to control my drinking. You can turn the light on. I guess after Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional. We define professionalism as the occupation of counseling alcoholics for fees or hire. But we may employ alcoholics where they are going to perform those services for which we might otherwise have to engage non-alcoholics. Such special services may be well recompensed, but our usual AA 12-step work is never to be paid for. Thank you. I want to thank Dana for asking me to participate in this. And I love our traditions, and as I said earlier, I believe that they're all interconnected, and none of them really stand by themselves. And I have a hard time talking about any one tradition without mentioning our others. And tradition 8, kind of ties into what really our primary purpose is, which we've talked about, several times here, is that Alcoholics Anonymous carries a message to the alcoholic who still suffers. That's what we do. We don't have the solution. We don't claim to have the solution to anything else. You might hear some people at AA meetings that say that we do, but Alcoholics Anonymous is for alcoholics, and we have a solution for alcoholism. And that we have people in our membership that are professional counselors, and many of the people that we have that are members of Alcoholics Anonymous come in from an environment where counseling was kind of they were counseled, or they were in some kind of treatment center or different kinds of things, and that those messages can come into our meetings. And then I think that's what we need to, as members, to say, well, what is it in, within our groups, to say, what is it that we really do? At the group level, we have the solution to alcoholism, and it's been out there for a long time, a movement, a message, a philosophy, or there's academic research that in psychology, that comes down and says that there's really no such thing as alcoholism, that alcoholism does not exist, that there is alcohol addiction or one of many substance abuse issues, whether it's nicotine, caffeine, heroin, meth, alcohol, whatever, it's all the same. Alcoholics Anonymous doesn't have a response to that publicly, but I believe that we should have a response to that within our fellowship. My personal recovery depends upon me being united with Alcoholics Anonymous, of tradition 1. So regardless of what some counselor says or some treatment center says, Alcoholics Anonymous doesn't have a public statement to any criticism of our model, of our understanding of alcoholism or anything else. I'm an alcoholic because I've lost the ability to control my drinking. This book right here talks about alcoholics being bodily and mentally different from their fellows. And there are people that don't believe that outside of our fellowship, that counsel people that come into our fellowship and that who have been basically indoctrinated into thinking that, that alcohol abuse is the same as fill in the blanks. And that's false, I believe. See, but I don't speak for Alcoholics Anonymous. Nobody does. We have literature that was approved by our General Service Conference. But there are members that say that doesn't speak for us. You don't have to agree with it if you don't want to. But the book that saved my life talked about me being bodily and mentally different from other people. Anybody that does heroin for any length of time or Oxycontin or any number of other, substances will become physically addicted. Not everybody that drinks is an alcoholic.
I was in a situation last night in a bar, and if you're, you know, I don't recommend spending going to bars, but you know, I've been sober for, you know, a few days in a row, and every once in a while I can show up with some friends from work. And there was, so we had a happy hour. I was there for a little while. It was a good time. I didn't drink any alcohol. And that there were some people that, the guy that left more, 3/4 of a pitcher of beer left. The group got up and left. See, now I'm in Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, is there anybody in this room that would leave 3/4 of a pitcher of a beer? You know, see, but it was funny because I watched it and that nobody noticed but me. To me, it's inconceivable. Okay? So I was with some people that drank, okay? And they left 3/4 of a pitcher of beer. So there's something about me that's different. So I come here because I'm like you. So we don't have an opinion on anything. Regardless of what anybody else says about alcoholism, we don't respond. If you go on the internet and look up alcoholism, find, just see what you find. There are many, many opinions about what alcoholism is, but we have our understanding. Now, if somebody else wants to do something else, that's fine. But our traditions say that we deal with alcohol. In Tradition 8, it says that that Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. So I look at that as really as being two distinct parts of it, that we don't counsel alcoholics. Our literature speaks for itself. But what Alcoholics Anonymous has is each other. That's really what we have. We rent this place. This is the Holiday Inn. You know, if your meeting, if your group is at a church, you're not, the group is not the church. You just rent a room from the church. So Alcoholics Anonymous is the people. That's what we have, is each other. And we have our experience, strength, and hope. And that you don't have to believe anything that I say, and you don't have to believe anything that the book says. You don't have to do anything in Alcoholics Anonymous if you don't want to. You can come to the meetings drunk if you want to. If you're not violent and belligerent and disruptive, we will welcome you. And you don't have to believe or do anything to be an AA member. And the second part of the eighth tradition is that our service centers may employ special workers. And I've been trying to find it in our service manual, and but it says in there somewhere that if we only do things that we need. So, you know, if we need it, we need to do it right. So that, as had been said earlier, that we don't, for our primary purpose is to carry the message that the alcoholic still suffers. So we don't get into a bunch of other kinds of things. But if we do something, we should do it right. So if we have a central office manager, we should pay them what a manager should get. Okay? Because we shouldn't be doing anything second rate. You know? And if we're gonna do something, then we should do it professionally, for producing our literature or having the phones answered or whatever it is that serves the groups. So the intergroup office, a central office, and I would have disagreed with one of the previous speakers, but like the Tucson intergroup predates the General Service Conference. So that I would say that the Tucson intergroup is Alcoholics Anonymous, and that if they answer the phone, that, you know, that's Alcoholics Anonymous. And we should have a first-rate operation. It shouldn't be second class. But that's the only thing that they should do, is dealing with carrying the message to the alcoholic who still suffers. And I just, if you haven't ever seen this, get one. But I love it. It's got the picture of this, of the rain is out here outside, and the phone rings, okay, and he says, no one could, he's thinking to himself, no one could pay me to go out on a night like this. Yeah, okay, I'll be right over, is what he says up to the phone. Okay, so he couldn't be paid to go out in a wet, stormy night to carry the message to an alcoholic that needs help. So it's a very different model of saying that we carry our message, because that's how I save my own life, you know, and that it's out of the, it's just, I'm not here to get somebody else sober, but I carry the message because it helps me. And that's what, you know, Bill told Bob, you know, I'm not here to get you sober. You know, you can, you know, I'm here. So Bill carried the message to Bob so that Bill would stay sober. And what ended up happening was, is that Bob got sober too. And then they all stayed sober together. And, I'm going to sit down before it goes red, but thanks a lot for being here, everybody.
Okay. Thank you, Martin. That was great. Next is 9. And once again, Daniel. Daniel's up for it.
Daniel, alcoholic.
Hi, Daniel.
Tradition 9. Now we're getting into the wordier ones here. Each AA group needs the least possible organization. You think we got to worry about that, really? rotating leadership is the best. The small group may elect its secretary, the large group its rotating committee, and the groups of a large metropolitan area their central or intergroup committee, which often employs a full-time secretary. The trustees of the General Service Board are, in effect, our AA General Service Committee. They are the custodians of our AA tradition and the receivers of voluntary AA contributions by which we maintain our AA General Service Office at New York. They are authorized by the groups to handle our overall public relations, and they guarantee the integrity of our principal newspaper, the AA Grapevine. All such representatives are to be guided in the spirit of service, for true leaders in AA are but trusted and experienced servants of the whole. They derive no real authority from their titles. They do not govern. Universal respect is the key to their usefulness. And I like to start that one off with a joke, but this one is actually a very serious one. And anyone who has ever put together anything in AA kind of can see that we don't necessarily need to worry about organization at its simplest level. You know, I could guarantee you, I could assign every single person, which we only got about, you know, for the tape, about 15 to 20 people in the room right now. I could assign every single one of you a seat to sit in by 10 o'clock tomorrow, and we would have problems with that. You know, try arranging a social function for a group of you guys in your home group to go out and to dinner, and just let me know how that works out. It's just, you know, it's so hard to get us all in one area doing the same thing. But what more perfect to drive this whole point home is, and I loved what Martin says, every single tradition leads up to another, and this is a redundancy of 2 and 4, and even more so of 1 and 1, very much like the 12 steps. In the 12 steps, the first step identifies the problem of being alcoholism. In the 12 traditions, the first tradition identifies the main problem of being unity. We're having a problem with unity. And the way I see the traditions is that's initially the goal. And they're going to give me 2 through 11, all to lead up to 12, where it finally ends up saying this to the end, that our great blessings may never spoil us, that we shall forever live in thankful contemplation of Him who presides over us all. Okay, so this to the end, that our great blessings, meaning me, you, everyone, we're all here united. My God, your God, it's all one. We're all united and we're on our path, and this to the end, okay, that He should preside over us all. That we're just on our way, that we're doing what we need to be doing under His will. And that's what the traditions bring about so crystal clear. The only experience that I can really shed light on is, about 2.5 years ago, And it ties into this tradition that you will see of kind of there's no enforcement in AA. There's no big shot, okay? And I learned that the hard way. In going around and barking orders at people does not make you happy. It doesn't make you a know-it-all, and it doesn't make you look good, cool, or approachable by anyone who might need help. And that was something that I had fallen victim to, that belief, for way too long, because everyone was doing it wrong. Okay? Little did I know that by me trying to change that, I was doing it wrong, because as Alicia talked about so beautifully in our fourth tradition, is that we are autonomous. And you have the right to do whatever you are going to do. And AA assumes that whatever you are doing has been decided upon in a collective group conscience, and that whatever that decision was is the voice of God. That is an assumption that our second tradition gives us. Okay, and then four allows autonomy, that can be whatever it is. And then for me to be there and say that your group was wrong, who am I as an individual to step in and say, no, that was not the voice of God that your group heard, and you are doing it wrong. And AA takes the opinion that because it is the voice of God, that no matter what, whether it is against the traditions or not, they allow you to do that, and all they will really say is, our experience shows that this usually doesn't work out good. And see, the reason why we don't need any enforcers in AA is because, let's think about what we got as enforcers. We got this thing out there called alcohol. Okay? We don't need any other enforcers than that. That's who we have waiting for us. We don't have someone saying, oh, well, you slipped. Oh, you made a boo-boo. You made a mistake. No, this is life and death. Okay, so let us get a little bit too big for our britches. Let's start taking a little bit more of this stuff into our own hands. Let's start deciding which traditions are important and which traditions aren't. Let's start deciding which steps we're going to do and which steps we're not. See, that's what I think are so cool about this, is Bill wrote a piece of literature, the tradition and how they were developed. And he goes on to say in there that he believes the traditions were much more important to AA than the steps actually were, because if myself as an individual failed to practice the 12 steps in my individual life, I may drink and die. That would be horrible. That would be just very sad. My mom would probably be devastated. Okay? But if we lose these traditions, we might all drink and die. So what is more important? And that's where our first tradition ties in, is our unity. Our common welfare comes first. The individual follows close afterward, but the group is more important than me. Okay, it riddles me down to size. So as much as there's a lot of people who would think that there would be, I've been one of them, fall victim to belief of, it'd be nice to have some enforcement. You know, one of my sponsees get a little lippy. Just send the old AA police out. You know? Because I've sat back in judgment and I've said, man, look at these newcomers today. They're so disrespectful. Because I remember when I was new, if you had 2 weeks, you were like my higher power. You know, whatever it was, I didn't care. You were incredible. And I'm telling you what, we're getting people who have like, they're at 6 months and they're telling me that I don't know what I'm talking about. You know, I feel like holding them down and saying, who's your sponsor? So we're going to get to the bottom line of this, but it's so unnecessary. You know, it's just so unnecessary, because I can tell you what's even worse for my ego. What's even worse for my ego is the ones that are doing it, that I think, that I have this internal opinion of, they really need some shaping up, are the ones that are still sober today. Imagine that. The ones that I thought were going to get it, well, some of them may be, some of them probably aren't. I haven't seen them. But this business of least possible organization, it tells me rotating leadership is the best. Okay? And that AA kind of does this in such a beautiful way. And 2 minutes, there's no way I'm even going to get into service structure. But if you want to sit and talk about it all day long, I'll make some stuff up that'll sound really good. And then I'll end up dumping the 12 concepts of world service in your lap. But the way AA has it all lined out to the point to where the more of a big shot you become in the fellowship, the least power you actually have is really the way it's been designed. I mean, rotating leadership, that in the one sentence that pretty much tells me the way it works out is, you know, there's been times where I was elected in a GSR of my home group, and I, you know, I got the pamphlet called Your Group's GSR, you know, and I start reading it. The first sentence says something like, the most important job in AA, so all of a sudden I'm important. I'm special, you know, and you should have seen my ego, our first group conscience. You know, I had that pamphlet there ready to throw it in somebody's face. I have the most important job, don't you know? And none of them were interested in hearing it. And I served my 2-year commitment as GSR, and just about a time that I found out exactly what I was supposed to be doing, I was rotated out. And even in the setting of a home group, and I'll close with this, my ending story, of which I think is just so relevant, is that I had this home group that was kind of dropped in my lap. That really, it was a meeting before, but I was asked if I'd take it over, and I said sure, because I'm a giver. And I said okay, and I was sponsoring a bunch of the guys from the Salvation Army who were coming there, and blah 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 blah, and I wanted them to still be able to make it out. And well, eventually a couple of more guys started showing up, and we decided we changed the formats, and we changed this, and we changed that. Well, the meeting ended up growing, and we turned the meeting into an actual group a couple months ago. I'll tell you how disrespectful these newcomers today are. They didn't even elect me to hold their service commitment.
Nice. I got treasured by default.
Okay. Now, tradition 10. And Alicia, again.
My name is Alicia. I'm an alcoholic. Tradition 10. No AA group or member should ever, in such a way as to implicate AA, express any opinion on outside controversial issues, particularly those of politics, alcohol reform, or sectarian religion. The Alcoholics Anonymous groups opposes no one. Concerning such matters, they can express no views whatever. This is my favorite tradition. I have broken this tradition so many times, in meetings, outside of meetings. You know, this tradition has really taught me a spiritual phrase. I have no opinion. And that's a really, really hard thing for me to say, because I got a lot of opinions. Mm-hmm. And the first one, and the most important one, is that I'm right and you're wrong. And, you know, and this is difficult for me. But what I love about this tradition is the fact that we don't have an opinion makes us all inclusive. You know, and that's what I love about Alcoholics Anonymous, is that we are always inclusive, never exclusive. You know, and I've broken this tradition a lot. The first time I broke this tradition, I was just shy of 2 months sober. It was November of 2004. As you'll remember, it was an election year. And I was asked to pass out the chips, and I said, I'm passing out the chips, and we're not giving to this political affiliated party tonight. And this guy stood up and he said, 10th tradition, we have no opinion. And I was like, oh my God, it was just a joke. Like, I thought I was being cute. I wasn't. And And it really motivated me to learn about the traditions. Another time, I was sitting in a meeting and, you know, this guy brought up a topic, on amends. But the way he brought it up, he ended up bringing up a very controversial issue, one that's both religious and political. And, because he was a man and he was sharing this particular story, all of the men in the room talked about all of the different ways that they had tried to do something similar to what this guy was talking about. And all of the women in the room were very, very uncomfortable, you know. And I only had 3 months. I didn't know about the traditions, but I knew that something was wrong, you know. And this was one of those moments when my friend Todd, he lives in Austin, Texas now. He looked at me and he said, Alicia, if you got a rumbly in your tumbly, you gotta let it out. You know, if you may be the only person who can express that this is not okay. You know, and you need to give other people permission to say that. And so that was really the big motivating factor for me to learn about these traditions so that I could be that voice, because I have the ability to stand up even when I'm standing alone. You know, this is why the traditions are so important and why we learn about them. I actually broke this tradition very recently, about a year ago, outside of AA. I was taking a public speaking class, and we were discussing hot button issues, politics, religious affiliated issues, and I walked into that class and I said, 10th tradition, you know, 10th tradition, I have no opinion. But I will tell you that after 7 days in a row of listening to hot button issues, I got a lot of opinions. and one of those was probably the most detrimental. I actually went up to a guy and told him that, you know, your dad's probably not really an alcoholic if he could just stop drinking on his own. You know, and I represented myself as an AA member, and I did this at 5 years sober. You know, that was not a fun amends to make. You know, it wasn't. Because I don't know. I have no idea. One of the main points of this tradition is that we have no opinion on alcohol reform. We have no monopoly on how you get sober. Just as long as you do. And if you get a life, great. If you do it through church, great. If you do it through AA, great. If you do it through hypnosis, great. We don't care. We just want you to be happy, you know, and live a good life, you know. And so who am I to say? Who am I to say how you get sober or how you live your life? I have no opinion, but I do. But I got to practice that I don't. You know, and really... You know, one of the big things for me is, you know, our social media outlets. You know, what am I posting? There are a lot of people who know that I'm an AA. You know, there are a lot of people. And if I start posting political or religious stuff, I am representing AA because they know I'm AA. I am the only big book they may ever see, you know? And so... What am I saying? What am I telling them? Am I telling them that we have an opinion? My brother believes that Alcoholics Anonymous is a cult, you know? Which it is, a little bit. I drank the Kool-Aid, and I don't really care. You know, but how did he get that opinion? Did he get that opinion from me? Did I do something to make him think that? You know? Or am I demonstrating that my life is better and I'm a better sister today because of Alcoholics Anonymous? Because that my life has been changed because of a spiritual awakening that I've had? You know, or is it because I'm spouting off all of the, you know, big book quotes and 12 and 12 quotes and, you know, preaching to him like he's an alcoholic when he may not be? You know, I think I think this tradition is important outside of AA, you know, in my daily life, how am I behaving with people? You know, I was at a camp out a few weeks ago, mini conference, Sedonipah in Sedona, Arizona, and, you know, people kept trying to start political conversations and kept trying to start all this stuff, and I just kept saying, not okay, not okay. We don't know if there's a newcomer here. You know, we don't know what they're going to hear. And I do believe... My personal opinion is I do have the ability to run somebody out of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, not that I'm powerful, but I don't want to be an excuse. You know, and so I'm always stopping those conversations and reminding people that we're here for fellowship, we're here for bonding, you know, and I don't want to say anything to you that's going to make you feel excluded. And that's not to say that I don't have opinions today. I have a lot, and I share them, and I have educational conversations with people instead of debates. But I have to know my audience, and I have to know my scenario. Is this a one-on-one conversation with somebody else, or am I doing this at a public level? You know, that's where this kind of stuff gets to be a problem for me. You know, it's not to say that we become drones and we just have one path and we focus on that path and that's it, and you are just an AA drone and that's all you can focus on. No. I get to be me. I get to be Alicia. I get to have my opinions, but I have to remember where I'm expressing those, you know, and being mindful of other people. And that's all I have. Thanks for letting me share.
And moving right along, tradition 11.
Kathy's going to come up and...
My name's Kathy. I'm still an alcoholic.
Hi, Kathy.
Tradition 11, long form. Our relations with the general public should be characterized by personal anonymity. We think AA ought to avoid sensational advertising. Our names and pictures as AA members ought not be broadcast, filmed, or publicly printed. Our public relations policy should be guided by the principle of attraction rather than promotion. There is never need to praise ourselves. We feel it's better to let our friends recommend us. I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, and I came through Intergroup. I made a phone call. I asked for some help, and I was one of those people that, yeah, I need help. No, thank you. I don't want it. Yes, I need help. No, thank you. I was difficult. I was one of those. And this man on the phone, he was talking to me for 5 minutes, and I really don't remember much of what he had to say. But he said, if you get nothing else, get this. When you get to a meeting, ask for a meeting book. And he was talking in a very exaggerated fashion, like I was 5 years old, and I was all right with it. You know, he was kind. And that was appealing to me. That got my attention. I finally got to a meeting. And I looked at these people, and, you know, the way I looked to these people then, you knew I was a newcomer. I had big old bug eyes. I had that crazy look in my face. You know, I was new. And I said, I need a meeting book. And they told me to get that. And they smiled and nodded, and they said, okay. And they gave me a meeting book. And the women said, okay, when are you coming back to the next meeting? How about if you pick us up and bring us to the next meeting? You know, and it was appealing again, and it was very attracting again. And it's what got me hooked into Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, there is this gentle, soft humility that operates when anybody in Alcoholics Anonymous is being attracting. I didn't understand how to say anonymity. I was one of those people that had to practice in the mirror, anonymity. And I didn't get it. I also didn't get the definition. You know, it took time, it took practice, and again, for me, it took experience. Anonymity is all about humility. And I didn't really get that. You know, when I looked at this Tradition 11, I thought, public relations policy, okay, so, you know, press, radio, film. Don't tell anybody at the level of a public situation who I am, what I am, and that I'm a member of AA. One of those three always has to go, and that's a true statement. You know, that's just the beginning. That's a guideline, and we need it. We absolutely have to have that. There's a lot of awful experience that AA has been through because we haven't followed that general principle of anonymity at the level of press, radio, and film. You know, I don't want to dwell on that. There's a lot of literature out there. Take a look at it. You know, our service manual. You know, somebody was talking about the service manual. We have some history in there if you want to take a look at that. But I want to talk about something a little bit more, that idea of anonymity being connected to humility, because I had a time with this. I didn't get it. And again, I was of that opinion that traditions are for the GSR and for the home group, and it's not personal. And I was wrong. First thing I wanted to read, the principle of anonymity was horse and buggy stuff. So my sponsor, as she's working with me on this tradition, said to me, this is a very limited definition of anonymity. There's no humility in the person that's saying that, as she read it to me. She explained to me that, you know, that's a person that's out there doing their own thing. I got an opinion. I have an opinion. You know? No humility. And guilty. You know? I'm right there with you. This principle of anonymity is horse and buggy stuff. Says who? You know, says the person that whose best thinking brought her to Alcoholics Anonymous? You know, that gives me pause to think a minute and just say, hey, wait a minute. You know, there's a whole host of experience. I don't have to learn everything the hard way. I can learn from somebody else's mistake. Thank you very much, and have a better life. So, you know, I took a look at it, and we studied it some more, and, you know, we looked at that last part, and it says, personal ambition has no place in Alcoholics Anonymous. So even if I'm voting for what I think and pushing for what I think is the best for Alcoholics Anonymous, I need to pull back the reins if I find that I'm getting that, is a little bit too much, because I've lost that soft, gentle humility. That thing that was so appealing to me in you guys when I was coming to Alcoholics Anonymous on the phone and in person. You know, that soft, gentle thing that says, come here. You know, if I'm pushing, I'm not there. If I have that sense, this is all very visceral for me and it's gut. But if I'm pushing or promoting an idea, I'm off track. I'm really off track. Another story, get involved in service, man. You'll get a whole bunch of stories. Our intergroup liaison, again, this was in New Jersey. I've been in five different areas, but this was in New Jersey, reported that outside our area, Experience Strength and Hope, it was found necessary for one group, it was a little suburb in Chicago, to support the alcoholics in this particular suburban area. This goes way back. They decided to charge for hearing Fifth Steps. You know, and we heard that and we laughed, and yes, it was corrected, and the people that were doing this were, they had a little conversation. I'm sure there was some interesting conversation. But this is the stuff that happens when we get involved in promotion. This is the stuff that happens when I don't pay attention to that thing in my gut that says, go, push. I loved what Bill was talking about when he talked about his boomerang. You know, that person that can do, that person that has that drive, that person that can put his mind to anything and succeed. And man, I just end up being the bulldozer, pushing up more obstacles than I clear. If I'm doing something like that, I'll end up like that suburban Chicago, charging for our 12-step program. Yeah, oops, missed it. That soft, gentle humility that I had when I was exposed to Alcoholics Anonymous for the first time, it's gone. I blew it. I don't want to go there. It becomes important to me to always keep in check that ego. All of a sudden, this tradition, 11, is tied in with step 4, where I learned about false pride for the first time. You know, there's a hook there. Those two things become very, very much related, and I'll finish with this last sentence. In this tradition, each member has become the active guardian of our fellowship. Man, all of a sudden I've got this responsibility to not only know about the traditions, but to encourage them, promote them in a way that is attracting. That's a high standard for me. I had to practice that. And, you know, sometimes I was all right, and sometimes, a lot of times, I wasn't. But it set the bar. It let me know what I needed to do so that other people coming in the door can have the same experience I did and want to come in and stay and pass it on and pass it on. Thanks.
Okay. And we're coming to the end. Oh, my God. You guys will get over it at the next meeting. Okay, Tradition 12. My name's Dana. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Dana.
One of the things about this particular tradition are these particular traditions is when I first heard them reading this, I was thinking, man, they're adding things into this. It was so freaking long. I'm going, what the heck? By the time they got to the 11th tradition, I'm going, they're ad-libbing. I know it. They're ad-libbing. And finally, it says in Tradition 12, and finally, and I'm going, oh, God, thank God. We of Alcoholics Anonymous believe that the principles of anonymity has an immense spiritual significance. It reminds us that we are to place principles before personalities, that we are to actually practice genuine humility. This to the end that our great blessing may never spoil us, that we shall forever in thankful contemplation of Him who presides over us all. You know, I was thinking about what are the spiritual principles? What are they talking about? We did another workshop on the traditions once before, and this was put out by a group in Tucson, the Midvale Saturday Morning Group. And on this little bookmark, it has the principles of the steps. These are the principles within our program. It's honesty, hope, faith, courage, integrity, willingness, humility, brotherly love, reconciliation, perseverance, awareness of God, and service. You know, those are the principles it talks about. You know, there's been so much writing about the traditions, and one of the things that I always like to do is go back to our founders, and it says, and this is something I got off the internet. It says, the Alcoholics Anonymous, we accept and honor all of the traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous and try to practice them in all our affairs, right along with the steps. When in doubt, we check our understanding against Bill and Bob's published commentaries on debate aspects of the traditions. And basically, it's got me thinking now. Humility is not thinking I know it all. I don't go over to somebody and say, you know what? I have the answer for you, and it's this. To be open-minded, you know, on the back of the medallions, it has the honesty, open-minded, and willingness. You know, to be open-minded about other people's ideas and their aspects about what they believe that particular part of the program is. It might enlighten you to something else, to be that open-minded, to have a little humility, and to be a little bit more aware of what other people are sharing and stuff. One of the things that I heard a long time ago in the program about humility is to lower yourself in status, is to not think that you're God. I heard that a long time ago, and it took me a while to get that, not realizing I wasn't God in the first place, but it took me some time to understand that, you know, I had to let myself get to the point of saying, you know, I don't know everything. I don't have all the answers. Maybe I should have a little bit more awareness of other people's opinions and their thoughts and have some respect for them. And it comes down to respecting each other in this program. That's the spiritual part of this program. One of the things I love about what Dr. Bob had written was he stated within the group, every member should know the first name, last name, address, and phone number of all the members in the group. If these are not known, then we as a group are not operating above the level of anonymity intended. We are not able to be of service to one another in a time of need. If I go to a meeting and I'm not sharing with you who I am, I'm being autonomous, and I'm saying my name's Dana, and you know nothing more about me, and you need help, then I'm breaking a tradition because I'm not being of service to you. I'm not utilizing all these traditions, my spiritual aim of what this program is all about, carrying the message to the alcoholic who still suffers. And that alcoholic who still suffers may be somebody with 20 years, and if they don't know my name or where I am or what, that's the reason at some meetings you have phone lists. Let's have the ability to call somebody up, being able to carry that message. There was another part where Dr. Bob says, and Dr. Bob and the good old timers, and this is, I love, it says, he, Dr. Bob, said, there are two ways to break anonymity, the anonymity tradition. One, by giving your name at a public level or press or radio. And two, by being so anonymous that you can't even be reached by other drunks. You know, that's something else. I mean, I started thinking about that early on in the program. I guess I was about 3 years sober. And I heard that, and I was thinking, yeah, that makes a lot of sense to me. When I go up and I share at meetings, now I know we're being recorded here, but when I go up and I share at meetings, I give my first and my last name. And they can find me in the phone book by looking up that first and last name. They know how to get a hold of me. You know, one of the wonderful things about this particular part of the program is that through working the program in the best of our ability, by working the steps and going through and working, utilizing the traditions and implementing all these things into our lives, we grow spiritually. We grow to a part of where our essence in this program becomes so apparent that we can carry that message just by living our lives as we do on a normal basis. That when we walk down the street, people see us and they say, oh, there's something about that guy. I don't know what it is, but there's the way he carries himself, the way he acts, the way he behaves. He has something I want. It's the spiritual essence of this program. And the spiritual essence of the program, it says at the very last sentence of the 12 and 12, it says, we are sure that humility expressed by anonymity is the greatest safeguard that Alcoholics Anonymous can ever have. You know, I don't go up to people and say, oh, my name's Dana, I'm an alcoholic. I go, hi, my name's Dana, I'm such and such. I'm a medical biller. I'm a medical records person. I do this, I do that. I don't share my issues with Alcoholics Anonymous to others unless I feel comfortable or I can enlighten them in some way because they've requested it. I need to maintain my humility in the spiritual realm of this program in order to carry a message correctly. My message being carried correctly isn't going out and saying, look at how wonderful I am. Look at how great I am. See? I'm the DCMC for Pima County. Once in a while I'll mention that, but I only mention that in order to make announcements. When I go to a meeting, I went to a meeting last night, and for my sobriety date, to share my anniversary with these people. I didn't go up there and say, hey, my name's Dale, I'm an alcoholic, and I'm the DCMC for Pima County. No. I go up there and share my experience, strength, and hope with each other, with all these other people within that program, that I can share and carry the message correctly. And to carry that message correctly for me is using the spiritual essence of this program. And I am finished with my presentation. I want to thank all the presenters here this evening. This morning. I got evening from you. This morning, for being here and available to share with you what they have found in the 12 traditions. So I want to thank them. Daniel, Alicia, Captain, Martin. And now what we're going to do is we got some time. We got about 10, 15 minutes. What I'd like to do is hear some of your insights of what you got from this. If you have something that you want to share, if you have a question that you want to ask, Daniel will answer a question. He has all the answers. Alicia will give you her opinion.
Hi, Stephanie. I had this weird question presented to me from somebody who's not in the fellowship. She works for a call center, and she's not an alcoholic, and she works for like a medical call center or something, and one of her clients is a Utah group for Alcoholics Anonymous, and they get like, I guess she's not supposed to disclose this to me for her job purposes, but their 24-hour thing, like how we in Tucson, like we volunteer. I volunteer to get the phones, whatever. And so, but their 24-hour system goes to a freaking call center, and then they get it sent. Like she's supposed to call somebody, you know. And I guess like I don't know, she was complaining. She's like, "You fucking drunks don't answer your phone." Like that's what her. I had never heard of such a thing since we volunteer in Tucson to take our phone. So I had never, and we were. I had heard you talking about saying that, like you know, we may employ whatever and pay for services and whatnot. So I had never heard of such a thing. So I was wondering, as far as our traditions go, what's that about? If you know.
I can answer that, but does somebody else, so one of our other panelists, have an answer to that?
I think you'd be perfect, Dan.
Martin, you want to go ahead and answer?
Yeah. My name is Martin, and I, in a previous rotation, we talked about rotations. I was the public information coordinator for Area 3, which is our, which is Arizona. And we put together a forum, a public information forum of finding out how people would reach out to Alcoholics Anonymous in Arizona. And I found out that there's a lot of ways that, that newcomers can get in touch with Alcoholics Anonymous in Arizona. Here in District 12 in Casa Grande, Pinal County, they have a cell phone, okay, that the district actually purchased. They don't have a central office here. There's a cell phone that they pass on to person to person. So in Utah or wherever this place is, that would be an autonomous, just like we're talking about here, that's how that, whatever it is, intergroup, district, what, however that is, they have decided to do it that way. And so it was said here that nobody would be able to say that they're doing it wrong. It's unfortunate to get, that your friend has this perception of Alcoholics Anonymous about people not answering their phone. And that's why it was mentioned here that each one of us represents Alcoholics Anonymous, so that if we commit to do something, we should do it right. You know, that it's unacceptable, it's unconscionable to be able to have a phone that's supposed to ring wherever it's, whether it's an answering service, a cell phone, a central office, a 24-hour contact, whatever it is. If a newcomer is trying to reach Alcoholics Anonymous, that our job is to make sure that the newcomer has a contact. And, you know, so that there is a real problem, but it, as somebody else said, there's no AA police, so that nowhere, anywhere is anybody going to call up this group or this committee and say that they're doing it wrong.
Right.
You know, nobody has the right to do that.
I think, and then I have a second question to that, with the financial aspect of it, the how we spend our money thing. I didn't realize that, I guess I don't, we can spend our money on whatever I want them to, I guess. Because I didn't realize that you paid for that services.
Well, you would also pay in interviews to be able to have a phone, too. So, mm-hmm. You know.
Yeah.
Can I speak to that as well?
Yes. It's open.
Tara's still an alcoholic. And in Maricopa County, we, you know, we're blessed that we have a lot of people who are willing to be of service and able. And I actually ran the phone committee for our intergroup for a little while, and for me that was never a problem. There are always volunteers. We even have a class that we hold once a month about how to answer the phone, so that You can show up to the intergroup meeting about an hour before the meeting and ask questions and find, okay, if this situation happens when I'm on the phone with an alcoholic, what do I do? You know, we're blessed that we can provide that service and we have people that are willing to show up and do it. But if not, you know, it's one of those catch-22 situations, I imagine, that if nobody's there to be of service, you've got to do something. Because if it was me and my intergroup, I want that phone being answered.
Kathy, did you have something?
My name's Kathy. I'm an alcoholic. I just had a little experience. I lived in Kentucky, in rural western Kentucky. The counties there are huge, and they can be huge because there's just not a lot of people there to service. In New Jersey, everything is congested. The districts had to be smaller. The going back to Kentucky, they used an answering service. It made sense when you've got that low population density. The answering service said, okay, I need to call somebody in this area. Now they can zero in and they can pinpoint. There was no intergroup office. You know, they didn't have money for that. What they did is they decided what's the best way to spend the money, took a look at it, studied it, got informed, and that's how they decided to spend it. It made sense then. Not answering the phone doesn't. That's all another story. Just an experience.
Yeah, the other thing is, real quick, and then you can have it. I took a trip to Wisconsin. While I was in Wisconsin, I was traveling from Oshkosh to Stevens Point, and I wanted to hit a meeting in Stevens Point when I got there. Well, I didn't have a meeting scheduled, so I called up Alcoholics Anonymous in the phone book that I found there. When I got a hold of Alcoholics Anonymous, they said, "Well, we're an answering service for." AA, we'll get in touch with somebody. I said, I'm just looking for a meeting. Don't you have a schedule in front of you? And the lady says, I'm in Florida. So I don't have a meeting schedule for you. So what I ended up doing, of all things, is I called up central office here in Tucson. Yeah. And central office in Tucson gave me the name of a meeting in Wisconsin for some place to go. One of the things about our service structure is that we may employ special workers. Now, that special workers can go out to corporate companies and such. If we don't have the ability to fulfill a service for an entity that needs to be taken care of within our structure, we can actually go out and hire somebody to take care of that for us. And we do it all the time. General service offices are constantly outsourcing some of their stuff. We outsource our warehouses for GSO through the grapevine. So, and those workers are getting paid and stuff like that. So we have to be able to provide a service for our fellowship. And sometimes it comes through hiring outside sources in order to accomplish that. Daniel
Alcoholic. And there's one line in the long form of the 12 traditions that is only in the long form, not in the short form. And it's before it even gets into the traditions, and I don't know if it was even read. But it speaks miles to me. It says, our AA experience has taught us that, and then it says one. And it starts with our first tradition. And that's the only thing I could really say about what we're talking about is we at least now have an experience with the way that works. Maricopa County happens to take care of it the way that we see it to be the most effective, and probably the reality for that space in Utah is there are probably people getting sober there. So who are we to say that they are ineffective AAs? But the only thing that every single person in this room can take out of this question and conversation is, let's say 2 weeks from now, because I don't know, I don't have a crystal ball, I can't predict the future, let's say I'm sitting in a group of people that we are making a decision on what our phone service is going to do. I at least know one thing that probably is not the most effective, that if it was brought up in discussion, I could say, you know what, no, I've heard of this before, and this is what has been said about it. So that would be the only thing is just to, everything is for an experience. That's why it's not a mistake, is because whether they learn from it or not, whether they change it or not, it really doesn't matter. It gives us experience that we can base our actions off of now or in the future. So everything is necessary, and God knows there could be millions of other areas that are using us as examples of what not to do or what to do. So it's all one and the same as far as seventh tradition and money goes, though. We vote in quite a few people to make decisions on how that money is spent and where it goes, and those are accessible to see where that money is spent if that is a concern of yours. That's it. Thanks.
Okay, great. Is there any other questions? Somebody else have a question?
I'm Bill. I'm an alcoholic.
There you go.
Yeah, it seems to me that we break tradition seven all the time. So I'll throw a controversial turd on the table. AA groups themselves ought to be fully self-supported by the voluntary contributions of their own members. We pass baskets all the time, and we take anybody's money, not just our members. I think that's a contradiction. I don't think it's right. What say you?
Let's see. You're talking about the members of the group.
Yeah, that's what it says, the group members. To me, that's what it says. Yeah. So I feel like when we pass baskets and ask for money, that the contributions really should come from the group members that have said that they're going to be members of that group. And we happily accept, you know, all kinds of money. And there's even in central offices, I think there's ways to contribute, you know, to the webinar. And it seems like we're going to approach that, where the voluntary contributions are not from the members and people that are saying that they're members of those groups. And it seems like we contradict that tradition left and right. So I'm just curious to hear your guys' opinion on that, because it's something that's occurred to me.
Are you sure? Are you sure you want to hear my opinion?
Okay, go for it.
But
I always want to hear opinions. I mean,
what's your experience?
I think
we have no opinions.
The experience
would be
that they wouldn't, right?
Yeah.
And that I would have a number of responses. One would be is who decides who's a member of the group? Okay. So then, if they want to decide, if they want to contribute to that group, then they can do so. The intent of that tradition clearly would be is that we're not accepting outside contributions from members outside of Alcoholics Anonymous, and that without the voluntary contributions of group members or AA members, because you can be an AA member without being a member of a group. You're an AA member when you say you are. And that, but there are inner groups or districts or the general service office would not exist without the voluntary contributions of members and groups deciding to use group contribution money to support our service structure. The Alcoholics Anonymous would have collapsed long ago without the voluntary contributions of AA members.
And my experience is I have two meetings in any given week that I have commitments, personal commitments to be at. One is my home group where I do service work, and another is a meeting that I just really enjoy, and I make a personal commitment to be there every week. I drink their coffee, I eat their cookies, and I sit on their chairs, you know. For me, my being a part of the group means that my dollar belongs in that basket. And if I'm at another meeting and I'm drinking their coffee and I'm eating their cookies and I have a dollar in my purse, it needs to be in that basket.
My name is Lisha. I'm an alcoholic. I go to a meeting quite regularly that's a very, very small home group. But there are a lot of people in the meeting. And if it were only home group members contributing, they wouldn't make their rent. And they wouldn't be able to provide a meeting, you know. So in that moment, I am a group member and I'm contributing to keep that meeting going for the newcomer. And I will tell you this, at the risk of being controversial, my parents break this all the time. My parents come with me, my mom especially, my dad doesn't live in Tucson, But every time my parents come with me to a meeting, they put a dollar in the basket, and they're not AA members. They're not even Al-Anon members. like they won't go, you know, and I will sit there and I'll say, Dad, Mom, you can't put a dollar in. You're an outside contribution. And they look at me and they say, we don't care. This program saved your life and it saved ours. So we're giving a dollar so this meeting can keep going, you know, and like $1 from my parents is not really going to break AA, you know, like, it's just not. I think that dollar, like you were talking about, it shows gratitude for the meeting. And, you know, as long as we're not going to banks or going to Budweiser or going to, like, making bake sales, you know, to raise money for Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, it really, it's all okay, you know. There are no mistakes, like Daniel said.
Kathy?
My name is Kathy. I'm an alcoholic. If I hear what I think you're saying, a group should give that money back, like your parents. The group should address her parents and say, you have to give that money back. And, you know, I look at something like that, and I'm just thinking, hey, police. You know, I wouldn't feel comfortable with something like that being enforced. You know, our disease does the enforcing. We don't need to. You know, state something. You know, sooner or later, people get into the program, and they realize, okay, this is for group members or AA members as a whole. When I go visit your home group, I'll put a dollar in the box or in the basket. And I'm okay with that. You know, I'm still an AA member supporting Alcoholics Anonymous. But that's always beside the point. The thing for me, and this is just my stuff, there's only one way to enforce that, and that gets into AA police. And that's just not something I want to go down. Thanks.
And that fashion that if we had to change it, we would have to change it so that there would have to be directives, and that I wouldn't be able to be a member. That when I came in here, I was broken and fucking drunk. So many times that, like, when some days I can put $5 in the basket, and then I go weeks where I can't put shit in that fucking basket for my home group or any other meeting that I fucking go to, and that, like, would I not be able to attend my home group meetings because I couldn't pay my dues or pay my fucking buck or pay my free coffee or pay for my coffee or pay for my meeting? And so, like, that's why there, it can't be structured, it can't be user fees. We could, you know, like, anybody who wants to put their four fees in or fuck in or not put shit in, like, that's why it is the way that it is.
Can I see you, service man?
Daniel Alcoholic.
Service man.
I think in 1946 when they wrote these words, I don't think they had something as far as 70 meetings a day where you could just Google AA Tucson and, you know, land 120 meetings to go to. I think they were pretty small groups and very much more spread out. So the language might have to do with the time that it was actually written. As far as the actual, you know, all I know about contributions is that we do have a limit set on how much we can accept as far as what we can accept past and what we cannot. I don't want to make it seem that I don't think, you know, oh, $1, $2 here, blah, 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 no big deal, because it is a big deal. Every single dollar that is contributed, very spiritually moves up the ranks from your hand to your group's basket to, central, intergroup, area, district, sub-district, to wherever it goes from there, to all, you know, and then all the way back down the scale as well. So I mean, it is big, but I don't at that kind of level. I am a believer of, you know what, if that basket's passed, and we're $2 shy, I think that it should be a part of the group members who say, you know what, oh, here you go, here's $2, let's cover our rent. You know, that it shouldn't, we shouldn't go out on the street with a sign saying our AA group didn't meet our rent, can you guys contribute? Or, you know, pass it around for non-members, but
also, if I like to attend a certain meeting and I like the way that group functions and I am of service at that group, or let's say I even go there and I drink their coffee every single day, you know, I should probably throw a dollar in the basket because I like attending their meeting and they need to self-support themselves as well. I think it's just how analytical do you really want to get over the words and the time of the time that they were printed.
I'm going to follow this up real quick and then we can close. One of the things that is pertinent to point out at this point is that each group is autonomous. Each group has the right to make decisions on how they will obtain their funds. And I mean by seventh tradition, and whether or not they're going to accept donations like you had mentioned from somebody who's outside of the program who comes in and just looks around. And that would be pertinent to bring up in a group conscience. Mm-hmm. In our concept 12, it says that our group conscience is the one that makes the decision, and we should come to a decision after discussion and a vote taken in substantial unanimity to decide on that particular situation. And what I have found through experience, through my service work and stuff, is that due to the fact that each group is autonomous, that if you bring this up to the group, one of the things that you might do is make a suggestion for an alternative. For instance, may put it in your opening preamble. I mean, in your opening statement of the meeting. If you are not a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, there is not a need to adhere to the seventh tradition. That could be something you do. But each group is autonomous. They can do what they want. And if they are receiving funds in the aspect of somebody that's not in the program, it's probably an open meeting. And therefore, they can make their own decision on how they maintain that. If they want to continue to keep money from people that aren't in the program. I understand exactly what you're saying, though. A way to get out of that situation is find a closed meeting. There are only alcoholics there. All right, if we could close... let me ask real quick. Does anybody have if anybody has a question that was not brought up or not answered, you can get a hold of any one of us. We're going to be out in the foyer probably for a little bit, and you can ask us any questions there or not. So if we could close with the Lord's, I think the Lord's Prayer would be adequate since it's a spiritual program.
Sure.